So for a staff to turn into a big snake, it's not possible. At least nowadays, we are not aware of that.
Yes.
But this is mentioned in many scriptures, including the Quran, that this was a miracle of Prophet Moses alayhi salam. Are we able to reject this miracle just by the claim that a staff cannot turn into a big snake based on
the serpents?
Exactly. Based on the laws that we are familiar with? No. We believe in the power of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. And again, I repeat, we do not mean that this is against the laws. Yes, this is against the laws that we are familiar with. There might be other laws that we are not aware of them. So this is one point regarding splitting the moon. It can happen through the permission and power of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, although so far we may not have a scientific justification for that.
Questions and answers on Islamic beliefs on IRIB English Radio. You can send your questions to englishradio@irib.ir.
But second of all, according to some scholars, splitting in the, celestial bodies is not something impossible. We have had splitting in the celestial bodies for many years now. I mean, even today, when it comes to different bodies in the sky, all the times we have some bodies being split and being separated to different parts. So in and of itself, for a
detached or attached to the others.
Exactly. Okay. For a celestial body or a sphere to be a split and then join again and separate to different parts is not impossible.
Yes.
So it is possible.
Yes.
So we shouldn't think that it is what we call it impossible. It is, rationally speaking, mahal and impossible.
Okay.
No, it is possible. It is happening. It has happened
for
millions of years in the past. I mean, many great bodies have been split into different bodies and then smaller bodies and so on and so forth. And it continues to happen still today.
And, you know, miracles like this, because there is a lesson and warning temporarily for that at the moment, we can say has their own effects on the spot, and after that they have to get back to its natural, shape. For example, if the moon is split into the halves and the lessons is given to the unbelievers of the Mecca, on that time for sure the moon must get back to its original shape.
Exactly.
So today, if for example no sign of such a split is found on the moon, it is something natural, logically speaking.
It's completely natural, and that is why we believe that the miracle of the last prophet should be in the form of a book that can be read by all the people.
Because,
as you rightly mentioned, any other miracle done by the prophets was limited to that time and of the people of that time.
Okay.
But when it comes to the Noble Book of Quran, then and the fact that it is free from any kind of distortion, it can be a miracle for all the people till the day of judgment.
That's right. So that's right. Something like that is also mentioned in the Holy Quran in Surah Ar-Rahman, Ayah 19. We have the verse, he merged the two seas meeting each other. Marj al-Bahrain, okay? I mean, the merge, of course, the merge and the merge in English are, I think, etymologically very much the same. Some people believe that this story, we can say, refers to the part in the bowl, in northern Denmark, that is Skagen, where the Baltic Sea meets the North Sea. Nowadays, you know, the pictures, if you Google it, just the part Skagen and the Baltic Sea meets the North Sea, you can find easily that these two seas merge each other. Surah Furqan, Ayah 53 also refers to this case too. So what about this one?
So this is one of the divine signs on the earth. So it's not, we are not talking about a miracle. It's another story. As you rightly mentioned, the issue of two seas merging each other and meeting each other has been mentioned in two chapters. In chapter Ar-Rahman, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala says that Maraj al-Bahrayni yaltaqiyan, he merged the two seas meeting each other. بَيْنَهُمَا بَرْزَخٌ لَا يَبْغِيَانَ There is a barrier between them which they do not overstep. And then Allah says that from them emerge the pearl and the coral. يَخْرُجُ مِنْهُمَا اللُّؤْلُؤُ وَالْمَرْجَانَ This is in chapter Ar-Rahman.
Yes.
In chapter Furqan, verse 53, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala says that وَهُوَ الَّذِي مَرَجَ الْبَحْرَيْنِ It is he who merged the two seas. هَذَا عَذْبٌ فُرَاتٌ وَهَذَا مِلْحٌ أُجَاجٌ This one is sweet and agreeable, and that one is bitter and briny. And between the two, he set a barrier and a forbidding hindrance. So according to these verses in two chapters, we have two seas in the world, or two types of seas. One of them is sweet, I mean the water is sweet, and yes. The other is bitter and briny, and they cannot... they do not meet each other, meaning that there is a barrier between the two.
Mm-hmm.
So
they meet, but they are not mixed.
Exactly. Okay. They meet, but they do not mix.
Yes.
Now, what are these two seas? As you mentioned, some people have mentioned some examples for these two seas, like the one that you mentioned in
Skagen, in northern Denmark.
In northern Denmark.
Yes.
But the point is that it can. It seems that according to the, especially marine scientists nowadays, it can happen in different parts of the world. Maybe that one is one of the best examples. But in different parts of the world, of course, I'm not sure how many. But when, for example, we have huge river of sweet water flowing into the great oceans. At least in some cases, they form a kind of sea of fresh and sweet water, and they do not merge into that salty water.
This is because of the nature of the water, so whether it's salty or sweet water.
And that, this is one point, and the other point is about the difference in the degree of density and concentration, and as you rightly mentioned, whether that
the molecules
is salty or sweet. And the point is that it might... The one that has been mentioned in the question can be one of the, clear examples of these two seas, but it doesn't mean that it's limited to that, because other people have claimed that the same nature, the same phenomena has been seen in another part of the world. That's okay. The point is that one of the signs of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala mentioned in this verse is that there are cases which have in which we have two seas. One of them is salty, the other is sweet and agreeable. And they do not get mixed to each other. And this is one of the great signs and showing the power of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala.
And at least, more than 1,400 years ago, referring to such a case.
That's the point.
Must be astonishing.
Definitely. Yes. And this is the literal understanding of the verse. And when we go to the deeper layers of the meaning, there are some narrations, especially in Shia sources, according to which the two seas are referring to Imam Ali and Fatima Zahra, salamullahi alayhima.
Oh, is it so?
And Lu'lu wal Marjan, the pearl and the coral, are referring to Imam Hassan and Imam Hussein, alayhima salam.
Thank you very much, Sheikh Karimi, for a nice elaboration. It was very kind of you. And thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of the program Question and Answer on Islamic Beliefs. For more information, visit our website at parstoday.com/en Call of Islam page. The another episode. God bless you all. Fi amanallah.
Inna fil jannati nahran min laban. Inna fil jannati nahran min laban. Li Ali wa Hussein wa Hassan. Li Ali wa Hussein wa Hassan. إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن لعلي وحسين وحسن لعلي وحسين وحسن كل من كان محبا لهم كل من كان محبا لهم يدخل الجنة من غير حزن يدخل الجنة من غير حزن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن علي حسين وحسن
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Pereza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Amin Alemi, Kabul.
Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
Around the world with reporters.
A resolution was recently presented to the UN General Assembly for the first time after the Taliban took over Afghanistan. While discussing issues including security, terrorism, and the social and economic situation, the Assembly significantly refrained to recognize the Taliban as a government. Experts believe this could affect the nation.
Non-recognition of the Taliban by the global community could negatively affect Afghanistan. It would bring illegitimacy to the Taliban government. It would also have consequences for the country's diplomatic relations, trade, and culture. There may even be more sanctions. These could have adverse effects on people, especially the poor.
In response to this resolution, Suhail Shaheen, the head of the political office of the Islamic Emirate in Qatar, said according to Islamic principles and values, the Taliban are committed to fulfilling all the legitimate rights and demands of the people, and that they are trying to provide the right means and environment to achieve this goal. Experts say the recognition of the Taliban could have positive results.
If the Taliban government is recognized after the observation of human rights and some other standards by the Taliban, it could have very good results for the nation, such as in the fields of international relations and international economic interactions.
Since the Taliban took control 15 months ago, their non-recognition, along with the sanctions imposed on the central bank and the freezing of Afghan assets, has driven the economy of the country to the brink of collapse. It is believed the recognition of Taliban may be a way to improve the situation in the country. But on the other hand, releasing assets and removing sanctions could also be effective. Abdullah Amirzadeh, Kabul.
Last winter was devastating for many Afghans, especially internally displaced families. Some lost their loved ones, while some were forced to sell their children and body organs to make ends meet. Yet this year, the UN Refugee Agency warns that the coming winter will even be more deadly and challenging for displaced people. According to the UN body, 79% of Afghans do not have adequate access to heating, and 79% households live in shelters that require repair. We are visiting a refugee camp in Kabul, where the people are struggling amid the looming cold season.
People here are facing many challenges. Neither the previous government nor the Islamic Emirate has taken any steps to address them. I know families here who are on the brink of starvation. They can't afford basic needs and struggle to survive. I wonder why the aid organizations are not reaching out to these families.
A woman who fled her house in Helmand during the U.S. war now lives in a cold shack, facing dire conditions. She says she uses plastic and paper wastes for cooking.
Look, I have no clothes, carpet, food, or home necessities. During the day, I have water with dried bread, even though I'm unable to chew. Look, this is my house. Its roof is so weak and perilous. Swear to God I'm suffering so much and facing numerous shortages. I don't know what to do. No one listens to us and no one hears our calls.
Some 3.4 million Afghans are currently internally displaced, with the majority of them living in such temporary shelters. Some of these people say the war forced them to flee their homes, and therefore, the United States is responsible to address your needs.
Indeed, the U.S. caused these sufferings and miseries. It's war in Afghanistan that killed and displaced people and widowed thousands of women. As a result, nearly 11,000 families have taken refuge in this camp. Today, it is their responsibility to help ease the lives of the war victims. The global community should help these people with relief aid, shelter, and protection.
Despite worsening humanitarian needs, the funding outlook for life-saving aid programs and assistance remains bleak, according to the UNHCR. People here are expected to have a tough winter. They're worried that they may run out of fuel if the global community fails to address their needs. Rahmatullah Baghban, Kabul.
The Yemeni Ministry of Health and Population held a press conference in Sana'a to highlight the impact of the continued Saudi siege on the national drug supply program. The event took place amid a severe shortage of necessary medication in the war-torn country.
The Saudi blockade imposed on the national drug supply program has caused one of the world's worst crises in the health sector. Medicines do not arrive on time at all due to the closure of Sana'a's international airport, which has also led to a high rate of death among people with chronic diseases. Patients can't receive basic drugs such as insulin for diabetics, and this is a tragedy no one talks about.
The ministry says almost 169,000 patients cannot receive life-saving medicine and they are in real danger unless the siege is lifted.
The pharmaceutical system in Yemen has been gripped by the Saudi blockade. International companies have partially or completely left the Yemeni market as they face extra costs as well as seizure of vessels for weeks and months. Moreover, medicines should be delivered in special conditions to maintain their quality and effectiveness. The fuel crisis has also negatively affected the shipment of medication.
Earlier, the member of the National Negotiating Delegation, Abdul Malik Al-Ajri, accused Western powers of preventing the entry of medical supplies into Yemen, saying this precedent has never been witnessed throughout history.
Officials believe that Saudi Arabia is deliberately preventing medical supplies from entering Yemen to pressure Sana'a to accept the UN agreement as it is. They say the siege has failed throughout 7 years of the war, and the kingdom's measures will push the Yemeni army to carry out new air strikes. Abdul Latif Al-Washali, Sana'a.
Days after going to the polls, the United States remains in electoral limbo. Dozens of elections for the House of Representatives still remain undecided, while control of the Senate is also up in the air, as two narrow races are still counting their votes. Just like in 2020, multiple battleground states have had controversial outages of their voting machines and surveillance equipment, leading to more questions by candidates and voters about the integrity of America's elections.
It speaks volumes, and we see these problems happening everywhere. If you ask me, a very common sense solution is to stop using all this technology to vote, because technology is easily hackable. None of it's secure, despite what anyone wants to say.
Projections show that Republicans will take the House, while the Senate will likely come down to a runoff vote next month. Democrats are trying to spin the idea that they could have lost worse as a positive outcome, but without definite results, political life is on hold with major consequences.
Going back to George Bush's own first election over Al Gore, you saw that it was in Florida, where George Bush's brother was the governor, that the ballots took forever to be counted in. So all of this technology, the oligarchy that we have even in America, these problems are not limited to the third or the second world. They're right here in America.
President Joe Biden indicated he will run for re-election, even though a recent poll showed that 72% of the United States doesn't want him to run, and that includes 56% of Democrats. Ex-President Donald Trump continues to separate himself from the mainstream Republican leadership, as he's expected to announce next week that he's running in 2024, refusing to wait until after the crucial Georgia Senate runoff vote next month. The latest inflation numbers barely edge downwards, meaning that the average American is now suffering from both economic and political instability. Mass layoffs, which had been delayed until after the election, have already started as the world keeps moving forward, even if America's electoral results do not. Ramin Mazahiri, Chicago.
The EU's executive arm, the European Commission, suggests the bloc's economy will have contracted for a six-month period up to the end of March 2023. This means recession. Inflation is forecast to stay high for longer than initially anticipated. Uncertainty surrounds the medium to long-term picture also.
The largest threat comes from adverse developments on the gas market and the risk of shortages, especially not this winter, but next winter.
As EU energy sanctions against Russia appear to backfire, business and consumer confidence continues to decline across the 27-country bloc.
We're very concerned, particularly for people that are on lower incomes that are very much affected by the higher energy prices.
I'm afraid that it can get much worse before it gets better.
The price of the energy is so high, the price of the products, I think it's a thing of everything.
EU leaders firmly blame Moscow for the crisis amid the conflict in Ukraine. However, some commentators claim the United States has used NATO to manufacture the war.
America is fighting against multilateral world, but basically is fighting against our freedoms, our democracy, and everything it pretends it stands for.
The EU says it will continue to fund the Ukrainian army and government no matter what the cost. Back home, the only good news is that employment figures remain positive. Just modest damage to the EU labour market is forecast for 2023. It is an area that is being monitored very closely by the Commission, as there's broad consensus. A sharp rise in unemployment would represent the final nail in the coffin for the EU economy. Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Diplomatic tension between Italy and France keeps mounting as the French NGO-run search and rescue ship Ocean Viking reached the French port of Toulon with its load of 234 asylum seekers on Friday. The ship had been refused a port of safety by Italy's far-right government for around 3 weeks, a decision that the French government slammed as irresponsible and inhumane. In response to the situation, Paris suspended plans to take in 3,500 refugees currently in Italy, calling on all the countries in the EU's migrant relocation mechanism to adopt similar measures.
È la prima nave.
The Ocean Viking, NGO ship that docks in France today, is the first NGO ship to have ever docked in France, and it has 234 migrants. This generated a very tough reaction with respect to Italy, which has allowed almost 90,000 immigrants to enter since the start of the year. 90,000! All NGO ships dock in Italy. What makes us angry? That Italy has to be the only country to provide a disembarkation port. This is not written in any agreement. France's response was aggressive and unjustified.
A third of the 234 asylum seekers on board the NGO ship will be relocated in France, while 4 passengers with serious health difficulties were transferred to a French hospital. This is not the first diplomatic rift between Italy and France in recent years. In 2019, Paris recalled its ambassador to Rome for consultations after then Foreign Minister Luigi Di Maio urged members of the Yellow Vest movement to continue with a protest against the French government.
There is a clear resemblance between the rift that took place in 2019 and the present one. Both cases are just a mere provocation on the part of nationalist, populist Italian executives. This tension between Italy and France is the result of the insubstantiality of the EU's migration policy.
While EU countries keep failing to collectively assume responsibility on the migrant issue, around 20,000 asylum seekers have died trying to cross the Mediterranean Sea since 2014, while tens of thousands are stuck in Libyan detention centers where torture, sexual violence and abuse are rife. Max Civili, Rome.
Walthamstow, a town in East London, home to more than 150,000 people and the longest outdoor market in Europe.
It also happens to be one of the poorest areas, where a national cost of living crisis is pushing more and more people to the brink. and less money in people's pockets has meant less business for the shops and stalls here.
Couple that with soaring utility bills and increased prices that make running a successful business a real challenge.
My weekly sale is like half and half now, this time especially. For example, is I'm earning about a weekly 1,000. For example, it's go 5. It's half and half now. And the people are scary. They don't spend much. They are very choosy now.
Quiet, very quiet. We see the market empty. Because we have people, but like pass, just on the pass. Nobody do shop because they don't have money. But rent now high. But energy right now very, very high. Gas high. And because that expensive right now.
The cost of living crisis has fed into the housing market as well, forcing Anne, who works in a coffee shop, to move house.
A couple months ago, I was living in a house share, but the landlord got really, like, worried about the cost of living, and he, like, tried so hard to, like, increase the prices little by little, and we ended up, like, having an argument about it, and he ended up, like, evicting me because, like, I didn't think it was fair, but he was forcing us to do stuff. So now, like, I'm paying, like, a really high price for, like, such a small room, no, like, living room or anything.
More than 6,000 people in this area claim universal credit. Recent surveys have found that nearly half of the children here live in poverty. Desperate parents and households are having to rely on charities such as this one to get by. We were told the Roxana Khan Foundation Food Bank gives donations to an increasing 300 households every week. Inflation remains stubbornly in the double digits, and the government has hinted at increased taxes and cuts to public spending. Many here and across the UK will find it even more difficult to make ends meet. Saeed Puriza, Walthamstow, East London.
A recent study published in the Indian Journal of Ophthalmology reveals that a large number of those who sustained eye injuries due to the use of pellet guns in the mainstay of Srinagar between July and November 2016 have suffered some degree of vision loss. The survey conducted on 777 eye operations during the period reveals 80% of the victims have vision limited to counting fingers. 35-year-old Arshid Ahmed, a student of arts, was hit by pellets in both eyes in October 2016. 6 years on, Arshid says his vision of higher studies diminished just like his eyesight.
Initially, I thought things might get better after the operation, but as time passed, it started to get worse. The most hurtful thing for me is that I am dependent. I feel I'm a burden. How long will my family be able to support me?
Arshid's family was more fearful than hesitant to talk, and convincing Arshid to speak to Press TV about his condition was no less than a Herculean task.
I'm often confined to my room. Darkness is my future. Although the government has bragged about rehabilitation and support for pellet victims, we're left to helplessness and nothing else. And speaking about my helplessness has now become a crime.
Before the abrogation of Kashmir's special status in 2019, New Delhi used shotguns for almost a decade to quell anti-India demonstrations in Indian-administered Kashmir, resulting in thousands of pellet injuries and the epidemic of vision loss in the region. Following the abrogation of Kashmir's special status in August 2019, people here might be upset about many things changing in the region. However, a remarkable achievement for government forces is that not even a single pellet gun has been used in the region following a tough crackdown on protesters. Kashmir has been a bone of contention between India and Pakistan for decades. Both lay claims to the region, but rule it in parts. India regards Kashmir as an integral part of its territory. Meanwhile, analysts say since the abrogation of Kashmir's special status, New Delhi seems to own everything in Kashmir except the problems of its people. Shahana Bhatt, Indian-administered Kashmir.
The largest ever joint U.S.-South Korea Air Force drills extended into last weekend as North Korea launched more missiles. Pyongyang argues U.S.-led military exercises revived this year are a rehearsal for invasion. Amid reports North Korea may conduct a seventh nuclear test, U.S. officials warned Pyongyang the use of nuclear weapons would end its regime. In South Korea Thursday night, university peace activists gathered for a vigil outside the U.S. embassy, calling for an end to the U.S.-South Korea-Japan alliance and removal of President Yoon. The U.S. has also conducted renewed joint drills with Japan, including a naval fleet review as Tokyo seeks to normalize its military activities.
North Korea faces much stronger conventional forces in the U.S.-South Korea alliance, which is at least partly why it showcases its missile and nuclear deterrence. With the U.S., South Korea, and Japan all bolstering their weapons and military drills, the questions are if and when North Korea will conduct a seventh nuclear test. Frank Smith, Seoul.
This is IRIB English Radio. Our website is www.parstoday.com/en.
In the limelight.
In the United States, Democrats are celebrating their unexpected victory retaining control of the U.S. Senate. We take a look at the world media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. British newspaper The Guardian has more for us. As the balance of power in the United States House of Representatives remained unresolved on Sunday, 13th of November, Democrats are celebrating the projection that they won control of the U.S. Senate, marking a significant victory for Joe Biden as Republicans, backed by his presidential predecessor Donald Trump, underperformed in key battleground states. While senior Democrats remained guarded on Sunday about the chances of keeping control of both chambers of Congress, House Speaker Nancy Pelosi hailed the party's performance in the midterm elections, following months of projections indicating heavy losses. Who would have thought 2 months ago that this red wave would turn into a little tiny trickle, if that at all, Nancy Pelosi said. She added, "We're still alive for control of the House, but again, the races are close. We don't pray for victory, but you pray that God's will be done." As of Sunday morning, Republicans remained 7 seats shy of the 218 needed to win control of the House of Representatives, with Democrats requiring 14, an indication that a majority on either side will be slim. As internal discussions between House Republicans intensify over potential leadership roles, with Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy facing opposition from the far-right Freedom Caucus, Nancy Pelosi remains circumspect about her own future prospect, saying she would not make any announcements on her plans until after the House's control has been decided. Nancy Pelosi said, "My decision will then be rooted in what the wishes of my family are and the wishes of my caucus." She also referred to her husband, Paul Pelosi's ongoing recovery following a politically motivated violent burglary and attack at their family home in San Francisco, California last month. Nancy Pelosi added, "There are all kinds of ways to exert influence. The speaker has real power, but I will always have influence." The Democrats were projected to maintain their control of the Senate on Saturday evening when a tight race in Nevada was called for the incumbent Catherine Cortez Mastro, who defeated Adam Laxalt, a Donald Trump-backed former state attorney general. The result marks a substantial victory for the Biden administration's agenda over the next 2 years, not only with regards to potential legislative negotiation, but other powers which include appointments to the federal judiciary. Speaking to reporters in Cambodia during the ASEAN summit, President Biden congratulated the Senate leader Chuck Schumer, but appeared to acknowledge how a Republican-controlled House of Representatives might affect his agenda going forward. He said, "We feel good about where we are, and I know I'm an optimist and understand that from the beginning, but I'm not surprised by the turnout in this election." Joe Biden added that the Democratic Party's focus would move to the Senate runoff race in Georgia next month, where incumbent Raphael Warnock will face the Trump-backed candidate Herschel Walker, after neither of the candidates received over 50% of the vote in Georgia. A victory for Democrats in Georgia would hand them an outright majority of 51 in the Senate without needing Biden's Vice President Kamala Harris to break Senate ties in their favor. As fallout from the midterm elections continues, attention is likely to pivot to Florida next week, where Donald Trump is expected to announce a 2024 run for the presidency at his Palm Beach home, Mar-a-Lago. Although polling still indicates that Donald Trump is the preferred candidate among Republican base, his support has shown signs of fracture after many of his endorsed candidates performed poorly in the midterm elections last week. One opinion poll released on Saturday showed Donald Trump's support declining by 6 percentage points to 50%, while far-right Governor Ron DeSantis, who cruised to re-election victory last week, saw his support increase. On Sunday, Maryland's outgoing Republican Governor Larry Hogan, a longtime critic of Donald Trump, urged the Republican Party to move away from the former president's influence. Larry Hogan said, "The definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting a different result." He told CNN, "And Donald Trump kept saying, 'We're going to be winning so much, we'll get tired of winning. I'm tired of losing.' That's all he's done." Nonetheless, Larry Hogan, who himself is believed to be considering a run for presidency in 2024, acknowledged that ousting Donald Trump from the potential presidential nomination would be a difficult task.
Oh,
NBC News tells us more about the same story. President Joe Biden on Sunday, 13th of November, touted the results of the midterm elections, with Democrats projected to maintain control of the U.S. Senate following Democratic Senator Catherine Cortez Masto's narrow defeat of Republican candidate Adam Laxalt in Nevada. Joe Biden said, "We feel good about where we are. I'm an optimist," Biden told reporters in Cambodia. He added, he was not surprised by the turnout in the midterm elections. Democrats defeated several candidates backed by former President Donald Trump to hold on to at least 50 seats come 2023. Control of the House of Representatives has not yet been determined, with several races still too close to call. Before Cortez Mastro's victory, which put Democrats over the threshold needed to secure a Senate majority, Democratic Senator Mark Kelly of Arizona won his re-election contest in Arizona, defeating the Republican candidate Blake Masters, NBC News projected on Friday evening. Both Laxalt and Masters were endorsed by Donald Trump and boosted his false claims of widespread election fraud in the 2020 election. In an interview on NBC News' Meet the Press on Sunday, Senator Bill Cassidy, a Louisiana Republican, blamed his party's underwhelming performance in the midterm elections on candidates who campaigned on Donald Trump's election denialism. Senator Bill Cassidy said, "I learned that the American people went a way forward that actually focuses on ideas, ideas that will make their lives better, not just their lives, but that of future generations." Senator Bill Cassidy added, "Those who are most closely aligned with the former president underperformed. Those who are talking about the future or who had managed their states well, they overperformed. The American people want ideas. They want a future." On Fox News Sunday, Representative Jim Banks, an Indiana Republican who chairs the Republican Study Committee, acknowledged that the election results were disappointing for his party. He declined to endorse Donald Trump. Trump has repeatedly suggested that he will soon announce his presidential bid for 2024. Despite calling Donald Trump a very popular figure in the GOP and a very effective president, Representative Jim Banks said he will save his endorsement for another place. The governor of Maryland, Larry Hogan, said he thinks it's time for the party to take a step backwards and figure out its priorities, pointing to Donald Trump for their lackluster performance in the midterm elections.
Start.
Movement.
Speed.
Live in hope.
Toward the peak.
On Youth Station.
Youth Station.
I am a Muslim.
I am a Muslim.
Islamite.
Islamite.
Allah my Lord.
Allah my Lord.
His word Quran.
His word Quran.
Muhammad Prophet.
Muhammad Prophet.
Praise be upon.
Praise be upon.
I am Muslim for all.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته Dear listeners, sisters and brothers from all around the world I hope you all doing well This is IRIB English Radio and I'm at your service from Youth Station I'm Beta and I'm a medical student who's interested in different topics and discussions that we'll have in this episode And with me, I have my dear brother, Rohani. Assalamu alaikum.
Assalamu alaikum. Thank you very much. Thank you for inviting me in this discussion. I'm a student of Islamic Hawza, but I got my PhD in Islamic philosophy.
Yeah, that's a pleasure to have you with me for this episode. Today, we're going to talk about something really interesting, which actually this is my question too. I am a candidate for youth generation.
I will try my best, inshallah, to have some pieces of advices for our friends or brothers and sisters as their brother or as their teacher, because I'm also a teacher. So inshallah, I try to share my own inshallah ideas and opinions regarding your questions.
As you know, there are some Islamic centers in different countries, such as non-Islamic countries and Western European countries. And what are the main features of Islamic centers in European countries to attract these sort of generation?
Yes, of course, it's a very nice and important question that should be dealt with in this kind of debates, or we can say dialogue and discussions.
Yeah.
First of all, what is very much important regarding these, the features of the Islamic centers in non-Islamic societies and countries, is this that these centers should actually deliver the youth some good ideas.
Yeah.
To help them to have a better life in those societies. So, of course, these ideas should be new, should be rational, should be, we can say, logical, in a way that should convince the youth, the young generation, and it should be satisfactory. So, of course, these centers should be like kind of training centers
yeah.
that should train the youth, the young generation. This is the first point, I think, in terms of training and education, we can say. And the other thing is that, of course, in these kind of centers, we should have good kind of teachers, scholars, to have a good kind of communication and relationship with the youth.
Yeah.
They should attract the youth by their good behaviors, by their good treatments with the students or with the youth. That is also really, really important. We have some scholars in some of the Islamic centers in the West. They spend lots of times with the youth. They sometimes go exercising, doing some kind of sports with them, having team.
Yeah.
So this kind of things for the youth is very much important. So that's why this kind of centers should entertain a little bit the youth as well.
Actually, that was a beautiful answer for me. But you know what? The youth generation is somehow rebellious, you know. This is Islamic center. And for example, there is a question in my mind that why should I go to Islamic center for entertainment, you know? There are other schools, there are other places for doing the same thing, you know. Mm-hmm. What actually differentiate these centers in different countries, non-Islamic countries especially?
Of course. As you rightly mentioned, you might find this kind of entertainment in some other centers and some other places. But the point is, and the very important point is this, that this entertainment should be in accordance with the Islamic principles, with the Islamic values,
yeah.
with the Islamic rulings. That is why it makes it completely different from what you may find in other centers in other places. So that is why we can say a kind of true entertainment or correct kind of entertainment.
You are telling me that these entertainments, these beautiful, actually attractive things should be according to the rules of Islam. You know, some youth generation may think like, okay, if it is according to the rule of Islam, it may have some limitations. I don't want this limitation. What should I do?
Mm-hmm. So this kind of limitation, you know, whenever you are, wherever you are, you have limitations.
Yeah.
So in this world, wherever you live, you have some limitations.
But some extra limitations, you know.
Yeah, of course. Limitations are always there. But the point is that we should understand that why I should, for example, have these limitations. Why should I, for example, let's say, cooperate with this kind of limitation? This is an important point.
Yeah.
And that should be explained by the teachers, mm-hmm. by the scholars, by the people who are educating the students, who are, for example, the teachers, like teaching them, training them. And of course, this kind of things should be explained, because if we understand, okay, these limitations are helpful for me, are good for me,
yeah.
and it will help me to improve, to get lots of achievements in my life. So of course, then that limitations it themselves become enjoyable.
We were talking about the attractive features of Islamic center in the West countries and non-Islamic countries. And you told me that we have to have some entertainment for youth generation according to the Islamic rule. And actually, there is limitation, but wherever you go, there is limitation. So they cannot actually have a nice time in that kind of centers, or they cannot be attractive. So if you do agree with me, we're going to go for a break, then we're going to come back and go on with that conversation. Dear listeners, go for a short break. Stay tuned. Welcome back. This is Youth Station. We're talking about the attractive features of Islamic centers in non-Islamic countries. As my dear brother told you, there are some actually ways that we can make it more attractive. But I want to tell you that first thing, which is, I think, really important, and most of the time, all the other generations are ignorant about that, is the youth generation, you know, has somehow some special features, some special personnel, some special mindset, and there is no effort to actually know these kind of mindsets which exist in our youth generation. What is the reason? And is it like that exactly?
First of all, it is the responsibility of those people who, for example, build or establish a center for the youth. So this, first of all, I think it goes to them to understand the youth. Of course, these kind of people should have good communication, friendly kind of relationship with the youth. Otherwise, they will not be able to understand them. So that's why it's better that, for example, the scholars, the teachers themselves should be young, a bit young, so that they could get the ideas, the mindset, the viewpoints of the young generation and the youth. They could help them better. For example, they can go with them to some sports, play with them, for example, some sports, and entertain them and, let's say, discuss them, debate them. So if this kind of things would be found in those kind of centers, it will be much more helpful for both the scholars as well as the youth. And
this
the,
is a nice point, students, I think, to use the youth generation for the youth generation, you know, to grow them up. But there is a problem here. For example, me as a candidate for youth generation, I'm here and, you know, it's like, for example, if somebody at my age tell me what to do or what not to do, or, for example, try to teach me something, it is somehow annoying for me because, you know, this thought that, you know, this person is as same as me and here she thinks that she's superior than me. And this feeling, I think, is destructive. What do you think about it?
You know, sometimes, for example, you have in your school, you know, high school or sometimes in university, some young teachers.
Yeah.
They are young, but since they teach you in a perfect way, they are very much knowledgeable, they are very much skillful. In that case, of course, you would listen to them, to these kind of teachers, though they are young. And I, as I told you, they should be a bit young, not at the same age of that youth or the young generation. Of course, there should be a kind of a difference between them in terms of age, of course. And of course, the physical attraction is also important. I mean, physically, also the center should be attractive.
Exactly.
It should not be in a way that, for example, when the youth come to that center, they do not feel, for example, comfortable in that center. Of course, this is also very much important.
I do agree with that point. I think the youth generation is always interested in, for example, beautiful things. And this beauty, you know, should be shown in different centers in non-Islamic countries, actually. But the problem, I think, here is that these countries are non-Islamic. And there are many factors, many other things, many other beauties that will be actually make us attracted to them, you know. And, for example, we're not in an Islamic country that you can tell me that, okay, everybody is doing that, so you have to do the same thing. You have to convince me to do that. And the ways that you can convince me, I think, are somehow complicated. And we need to actually train and teach people, special people, to do this important responsibility. And unfortunately, in my opinion, actually, this responsibility is somehow ignored. And we don't actually pay as much attention as we should. And this is actually the problem of these kind of societies. One of the features which can be so attractive is actually a strengthened the bond with God. I think the youth generation lack this part, you know, a lot in her or his life. We always are struggling with the problem of finding our identity. And I think one important aspect of identity is actually a religion. There is a problem here. Somehow the older generation think in a way that because we are young, we cannot understand. And if we are explained, for example, we cannot even understand anymore. And this is the problem. I think there should be less gap between us, and we have to speak to each other about these matters that we can understand, actually. If you tell us, if you believe in us, we will grow more and more and more. What do you do, actually, in your day-to-day life to lessen this gap between your generation and my generation?
And of course, I do agree with you that, you know, the people who have kind of contact or, let's say, relationship and communication with the young generation, with the youth, first of all, they should tolerate sometimes the different viewpoints or different, let's say, behaviors or treatments of the youth. They should bear it, they should tolerate it, and then they should respect them. And this is the point that they should attract their trust to themselves. Yeah. So how, this way, that should they should give time, they should spend time with them, sitting with them, and listening to them, asking them questions. When they ask, we should listen carefully to the questions to understand what is in their mind. And the, if the questions of the youth would be answered, answered very profoundly, we can say, or perfectly, in that case, of course, they will listen automatically. They will listen to you, and they will accept you, and they will follow you. Of course, this is the responsibility of the older generation to listen, to understand, to satisfy, to convince the youth in a way that the youth accept him or believe in him or believe in this older generation.
Yeah.
Of course, it needs a kind of friendly kind of relationship. It should not be that much formal kind of relationship.
Yeah, I do agree.
They should be like friends. And of course, they should sit together sometimes for maybe for some hours to talk, to discuss, to debate, to challenge each other, to ask questions, and finally to find out the best solution, the best answers for the important questions.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Youth Station.
Actually, thank you for your pieces of advice. I think it was useful actually for me, and somehow I got the answer to my question. I wish that was useful for the listeners too. So actually, as you know, we talked about the features that we have to make in Islamic centers to make it more attractive. And at the end, we actually received this point that we have to make a friendlier communication with youth generation, and this generation gap should be lessened. And when you try and when you spend time, both generations will understand each other more. And there is a solution for this problem, and this is spending time. You have to talk to them, and you have to try and struggle to actually put yourself in their shoes. And I think this is the most important point that we have to actually meet in all of the centers. Thank you for listening to this episode. This is all the time that we have for today, and I bid you farewell, and I leave you in the warm embrace of God. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio. This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.